Hello, welcome to a podcast from the Institute and Faculty of Actuaries. I'm Brandon Horwitz, an IFOA volunteer, and I'm delighted to be here today with the working party who've been focusing on climate change for risk management actuaries. We're going to be hearing from the working party a little bit about each of the individuals, what motivated them to be involved in this research, and we're going to be exploring some of the key questions which their paper covers when it comes to what is climate change and why should risk management actuaries be thinking about it and how can you take it into account in what you're doing in your day-to-day jobs. Delighted to have the chair of the working party, Wendy, who's going to kick us off. Wendy, if you'd like to introduce yourself, tell us a little bit about what you've been doing on the working party and what motivates you to be involved in this work.
My name's Wendy Walford. I work at Legal & General. My role at the moment is head of climate risk. So my background is risk management. And through looking at the risks that we as an institution were exposed to, it became quite apparent that climate risk was one of those forward-looking risks that we needed to be actively managing. So I ended up getting very heavily involved in how we developed our risk management framework to be able to incorporate these considerations, to understand what climate risk actually means for a financial institution, because we're familiar with it as a concept for as a private citizen. But actually to be able to translate that into the language of business and understanding how we operate requires quite a few range of skills, as well as understanding both the actual impacts, the potential outcomes and scenarios, as well as business, how it operates, what its existing risk profile is, and how it may be impacted. So those are all areas that I think actuaries are very heavily involved in. And this guide, I wanted to sort of help people really realize that climate risk isn't something that is siloed and on the edge. It is actually a core part of what we need to incorporate in our day-to-day business. And this guide looks to sort of start us on that journey to understand some of the challenges, how to translate an existential systemic risk into actually how we manage our business and our professional commitments.
No, thank you, Wendy. Good place to start is on existential systemic risks. And I'm going to turn to Mayuk. If you could introduce yourself and again, tell us a little bit about what you do in your day job. And what motivates you to be involved in this work?
Hello, I am Mayuk. I am a risk and modeling consultant in Hammons Robertson LLP in London. And recently I have taken up the role of lead climate risk analyst, analytics lead, sorry. And one of the things that I do as in like my day-to-day job is actually producing what you call economic scenario generators. Right. And economic scenario generators involve producing future projections of different economic situations and conditions and different asset classes and economic variables. Now, one of the questions we are often asked is, fine, that's all perfectly great and rigorous and intensive and fantastic. What about climate risk? Do you have it included as well? Now, that's a big question because probably the answer is a bit of yes and no, but that leads us to think about how actually to incorporate the climate risk into those projections. Because ultimately, when you value your assets and liabilities of the future, you have to have all sorts of risks embedded kind of when you talk about the future. So this motivated lots of modeling and thought leadership into development of scenarios and models from simple to complex. And I think one of the areas of interest for me since then is actually trying to understand how can we model this risk. And I'm telling the word risk in a very loose way because technically speaking, it's an uncertainty. And whether we can quantitatively attack this problem from that dimension of risk management, it's something which always wondered me. So I was very interested in joining this working party and produce and contribute in writing this report because we have to have this quantitative aspect of understanding this risk, as well as the holistic approach of understanding whether this all makes sense in the global concept of risk management of this climate risk itself. So I think that was the motivation, and we are where we are. We are in the first step of producing and trying to communicate to the greater audience what you have understood and what can be a starting point for them to understand this risk as well. You're on mute.
Thank you very much, Mayuk. It's very important in any podcast that someone has to go on mute and start talking, because otherwise it's not a proper podcast or a proper Zoom meeting. So that was just me fulfilling my duties. No, but thank you very much, Mayuk. I think you've bridged us from where Wendy was telling us about a very abstract existential issue. And if something's abstract and existential, there's not terribly much you can do about it. But I think you've brought us down to ground by quantifying that and saying that's, you know, one of the key steps to actually take this from being quite so difficult to digest into what are some sort of practical, measurable impacts on a business. I think that takes us nicely to Caroline. If you'd like to please introduce yourself, Caroline, again, tell us a little bit about what motivates you and what you do in this space, please.
Of course. So my name's Caroline Spence, and I'm head of the Chief Risk Office for AXA UK and Ireland. I am an actuary by background, and when I started taking on the role within risk and compliance, I got much closer to the climate change agenda within AXA, and was really heavily involved in building our sort of risk management approach to it, responding to any regulatory exercises that came out. So I sort of project managed the climate biennial exploratory scenario for anyone that was involved in that. And in doing so, I think we were asking ourselves a lot of honest questions as a business as to, are we happy we know what we're doing? This feels like such untrodden ground. This is new territory for us. There must be others out there that also are feeling the same. This, we can't all sort of be clueless, as it were, or feeling like we're sort of finger in the air trying to find our way through. So joining this working group and talking to others has been really invaluable for myself, and I've definitely learned things that I've taken back to my company. So I think I was really, really keen that others get the opportunity to do that, and I think that's where this guide is a really useful starting point for people, and will hopefully open up those conversations both within their own organizations but with the wider industry, because I think there's so much that we can all learn from one another in this space and support each other along in a quite a new but very fast growing topic.
That's really helpful, Caroline, and I think we probably all feel that. So, you know, all of us who work, whatever you do as an actuary, you can't miss that climate change is an issue, and it's sometimes embarrassing to put your hand up and say, I don't know where to start. You know, I'm completely clueless with all these acronyms and all these various different things. And I think one of the real valuable things your working party has done is you've started at a very accessible point for people, but you very quickly get into something which is quite substantial as well. So I think I'm just going to turn now to Peter, if you'd like to introduce yourself and tell us about your motivation for being involved in this work.
Yes, hi, I'm Peter Telford. I work at Legal & General as the Financial Risk Director for Pension Risk Transfer Business, and I'm the chair of the IFOA's Risk Management Board. I've been fortunate to work at two financial institutions making up my whole career, actually, Legal & General and AXA, that both have been for a long time very committed to making a positive impact on environment and climate. So I've been in a happy and well aligned place, if you like, in my working life, being convinced that better stewardship of the planet by humans is a practical and an ethical essential. So it's good to find myself in a shop or two shops that think the same way. So for the last few years at Legal & General, along with Wendy and others, I've been involved in building the firm's climate risk management framework, and now I'm working within it, particularly to quantify risk exposures. And discovered in trying to do that, the biggest question is how much do we know? And the answer is often not as much as we'd like. And so this guide is definitely going to be of use to people practicing in the area of risk measurement for climate risk frameworks, because it gives us tools and approaches that you know not everybody has been able to develop, or at least tells us where we might go and find those tools and approaches. On the IFOA side, with my risk management board hat on, we've built climate and sustainability issues into the board's objectives. And the work on those is now taking shape with a strong team of board members and other volunteers getting stuck in. So I'm really glad too that they will be able to see this as a sort of forerunner of all the great stuff they're going to do and a resource they can tap into, maybe enrich as time goes on, certainly put a framework around all the other research and learning provision that we want to do there.
Thank you, Peter. And last but certainly not least, Roelof, if you'd like to tell us a little bit about yourself and what motivates you to be involved in this work.
My name's Roelof. I am the Director for Climate Change Policy at Prudential Group. And I was lucky enough to get involved with scenario testing for climate change there, which has then expanded into various things like reporting for the task force for climate-related financial disclosures and the ESG reporting. I think the others have really summarized why professionally we should be looking at this, both, you know, as good looking after our policyholders, looking after the companies that we're involved with. But my motivation that I can add is a little bit more personal. I want to leave the planet in a better place for my two young boys. And hopefully by doing so, we'll also leave it in a better place for the rest of society, which we operate in. And if I can cajole and get the IFOA involved in making that happen, I will happily use those resources. No, I'm just kidding. But you know, that there's professional motivation for all of us. And I think this is very much also a personal issue about how can we not just, you know, make sure that we are ready for this risk when it happens, but also how can we help mitigate and influence it so that it is minimized going forward as well for all of us.
Makes a lot of sense. And before we start getting into a bit more detail in the discussion today, I'm actually going to turn to Peter and say, shall we start right at the beginning, Peter, for people who are listening to this podcast, what are the challenges around climate change? Where do we even start before we start getting into Wendy's existential systemic issues or even Mayuk's quantitative approach towards measuring them?
Sure. Well, I'll give you a perspective, and I'd be delighted if other members of the group can chip in as well. I think a key challenge for risk management actuaries in this space is just the fact that we are breaking quite new ground still. Good practice is still evolving. A lot of the information we'd like to have just isn't there, or we haven't found it. But we need to support decision makers in decisions that have to be made now if, for example, 1.5 degrees has any chance of happening. So we as actuaries tend to have a bit of a first do no harm ethic. We are professionally conservative most of the time. But here we are, climate harm is happening and it won't wait for our methods and data to catch up. And so we need to find ways to enable roughly right decisions and probably right decisions to be made now that will have a beneficial impact, rather than being really thoroughly kitted out to support acey-pacey decisions in 5 years' time that are too late. So that's why getting this risk management act together now matters, even though we may not be able to do it perfectly. Let's do the best and most useful that we can.
I think that's a really important role for the risk management function, which is to be able to identify that this is a real risk, as we saw with the Bank of England's climate scenario analysis. They defined a scenario that didn't include some allowance for climate risk as being counterfactual. It's just not going to happen. So you have to be starting to incorporate what those risks are. And to be able to incorporate that within your analysis, within your assessment of uncertainty, within your risk management framework, you need to be able to define what that means. And that's generally where we come down to the concept of transitional risk and physical risk, which is the physical risks are the impacts of more extreme, more frequent weather events. And the transition risks are the huge changes that we as a society and an economy need to make to try and mitigate some of those physical risks. And unfortunately, it's highly likely that it's not going to be an either or. It's going to be some combination of the both. there's going to be a lot of volatility. What does that look and feel like? And how do you ensure that you're successfully navigating through that in a prudent way?
Well, I think that there's clearly a lot there. And it's very interesting, you know, both Peter, that you and Wendy mentioned the fact that it doesn't have to be perfect, but we just need to start grappling with it. And actuaries, I suppose we have this ability to deal with quite difficult things which are happening at some points in the future, which are not that easy to quantify, which arguably puts us in quite a good position. But if we could dive into a bit more detail now, Caroline, just to actually think about, when we talk about climate impact, we're generally, as actuaries working for financial institutions, what is the impact on financial institutions and the value chain of financial institutions?
So I think over the last few years, there's definitely been increases in data collection and storage capabilities, and it's definitely been moving in a very helpful direction for financial institutions, and climate change is very much going to disrupt this if we don't get a handle on it quickly. I mean, climate change causes irregular weather patterns, severe weather events, and it's changing the patterns that we work with. Some of our traditional actuarial methods for analysing risk are just thrown off the balance when you've got this irregularity coming through. So it's increasing credit risk, it's going to increase losses from natural disasters, which businesses and financial institutions are going to want to be protected against. So the value chain is going to be as impacted as the financial institutions itself. So it's going to require more innovation, more product launches. As I said earlier, I think it's going to require a lot more collaboration between firms to make sure that we've really got a handle on this. I mean, one of the areas that I don't think we're necessarily talking about enough at the moment, but is going to start impacting, is the loss of biodiversity and the serious risks to financial institutions of that. So, for example, the pharmaceutical industry. So any of our health insurers or our life insurers out there, the pharmaceutical industry relies on wildflowers and other animal species for sources of new medicine. I mean, with that loss of biodiversity, it's going to start having an impact. And so, to summarize, absolutely, climate change is going to have a big impact on the value chain, and I don't think we fully understand what those impacts are yet, but I think trying to start thinking ahead, looking for those links, looking at what we've learned to date, but working quite collaboratively as an industry to understand how the data we have collected to date can help us, and what other things we need to be looking at and pull and sort of putting in place to make sure that we're not tripping up when we get there. As Peter said earlier, the decisions we make now really that are going to impact how sustainable we are and how able we are to operate in the future. So happy to take any other thoughts from the group there if they'd like to share.
Just before we move on, I think one of the key questions that everybody asks is, well, but you're financial services firms, you're not manufacturing pharmaceuticals, you're not actually, you know, getting involved in climate change. Mm-hmm. But people also talk about this idea of financed emissions. Can one of you maybe explain what financed emissions are and why they matter?
Sure, I can have a go at it. I think this dovetails nicely with what Caroline was talking. So financed emissions is the carbon emissions that's attributed to an equity or a corporate bond that you're invested in. So a company manufactures things, it emits emissions. Those emissions are divvied up into, you know, the shares and the corporate bonds that it's issued. And we, as particularly life and health or pension providers, invest in those. So in a way, we are responsible for financing those emissions. And that's what that represents. It's part of, for those who don't know, there's scope 1 and 2 emissions, and this is scope 3, category 15, if you want to go and look up the definition at some point under the greenhouse gas protocol, which I'm all too familiar with. But just maybe to add to what Caroline was saying there, I think, you know, the value chain really varies by the different companies. And the reason why I jumped to the greenhouse gas protocol is under scope 3, it looks at the upstream value chain and the downstream value chain, and there's 15 categories to look at there. And particularly, like I said, for life and health and pension schemes, category 15, which is the assets under management, is essential. And we, as custodians and stewards of many people's life savings, need to make sure that we look after those and make sure that they are climate robust, regardless of what happens. So that is, for me personally, one that I think, you know, a lot of life and health and pension scheme actuaries should be considering and should be going and looking at.
And I think, you know, building on that, Roelof, so you've started to talk about the asset side. Now we as actuaries are very excited about the liability side as well. And when it comes to modeling, the models that we use to do our work both look at the asset side and the liability side. I wonder if I could turn to Wendy and if you could help us unpack, Wendy, why do we need deep dives on climate modeling risk, and what are climate scenarios and how do they relate to asset and liability models and just some simple things like that, Wendy?
That's quite a large topic to try and unpack in quite a small amount of time. I think we've already touched on it, which is that this is a guide for actuaries working in risk management. They are very highly skilled in understanding the quantification and future scenario analysis. So it makes sense that a natural bridge into the world of climate is going to be through looking at how do we model this? What does it mean for our future financial risks and exposures? One of the key tools that we have in actuarial risk management toolbox is to actually use scenario analysis. There's a huge amount of uncertainty around exactly what pathway the world will take in response to climate. Will it be a smooth transition down to a net zero 1.5 degree? Will we do nothing and end up with the extreme weather events that we've spoken about? And so to understand that, scenarios are built that explain what the impact of these changes in weather patterns or the changes that are needed to the economic system, normally through modeling a carbon price and understanding which companies will then have higher costs that goes through into their balance sheet, to then be able to understand a range of potential economic impacts that can then be used and translated into understanding the financial risks that firms are running. There are significant areas of uncertainty in the assumptions, in the modeling approach, and in the outcomes that come out, because a model will only tell you what you have asked it to look at within the parameters of modeling. All of these are concepts that we are familiar with and we use in our day-to-day skills, but they're very different when we move into the world of climate and the additional layers of uncertainty, restrictions around data, incorporating models from other experts within an area that is not our field of expertise. For example, the climate modeling that we see from, for example, international models that are used and agencies around and being able to take those, working with those other professions, understanding what the limitations of their models are, to be able to translate that into financial models, to then be able to incorporate that within the actuarial work that we carry out, and to explain both the importance of the scenarios. What is it telling us about our risk that is definitely true, definitely exists, and where the areas are concentrated, alongside, but there is uncertainty here. We know we have material data issues. We know that we have interpreted it in a specific way to be able to enable modeling, and in a way that doesn't undermine the fact that we know climate risk is a risk and that it is going to impact. And those are some very difficult, very challenging discussions, but it's one that builds on a lot of the existing core actuarial skills. So when we talk about risk management, having a deep dive into actually the scenario modeling and the model risks associated with climate risk is a really, I consider to be, useful way to bring alive the challenges that we know we're facing and to really support that bridging of what is it that actuaries are bringing, what is their expertise, and why is it so desperately needed in this area, which it is.
And I think just looking from that comment, Wendy, in terms of you mentioned risk management and modeling, when it comes to risk management, a lot of us as actuaries who work in risk type of roles do get involved in risk taxonomies and risk classifications and all sorts of ways of thinking about the risks that impact a business. I wonder, Mayuk, if you'd like to help us think about how does climate change impact on perhaps some of those existing risk categories, or is it a risk category in and of itself that needs to be thought about? Do actuaries working risk management need to rethink what they do, or can they adapt what they do today to deal with this?
Thanks, Brendan. It's a very interesting question because it can be dealt in multiple layers. I'll probably give the modeling angle to it, right? So one of the things that I was speaking about, the stuff we do is future economic projections, right? And whether it incorporates climate risk. Now, there's one argument that climate risk is all, climate change is happening, right? So climate risk is already manifesting itself through other risks. So it cannot really separate it out from some of the traditional risks like market risks or spread risk, et cetera. So the point is, because they're so interrelated and correlated, so we are already seeing the impact through our modeling. Again, that's only one step because that's the short-term impact that we are already getting through the models. The longer term impact, which is how it will shape up the systemic changes, when you were saying, that's a bigger challenge because nobody knows about it and we have to create narratives about it. Now, for risk managers, whether we create that as a category, a different category, I think that may or may not be a very useful idea, but depends on how you see the risk. Because when you talk about impacts, we have to understand that, you know, from a quantitative point of view, we have a two-way view of seeing this as impact. First thing is what Wendy was talking about, the what if analysis, right? And the scenario analysis. So that's like what climate change will, how it will impact us, right? And there is another way, actually, if you look in the other way, because we are doing lots of activities, the policy changes, the things that we're doing to make it more sustainable, like making it more green investments, et cetera. So that diversion, et cetera, it's the other way around. This is like how we are influencing the climate change, climate risk itself. So it's a two-way thing. And again, this is a circular thing. And the correlation that we are seeing today between different risks, including climate risk, it will not be similar and it will go to a regime change or something. So it's a very difficult thing because in my point of view, they are extremely correlated. Extremely correlated because you can't separate out climate from the other traditional risks. It is just there and it is manifesting itself through millions of years of our, you know, global history. Now, talking about the modeling side in particular, I think there is a challenge regarding how to estimate the correlations. I think Caroline is talking about data and everything. So that's, as I said, that's only one part of it because it gives a short-term view. But again, longer-term views needs a bit more explorative analysis like scenarios and everything. And you have to get to a level where you create narratives for different types of future and overarch the modeling that we already have with those kind of scenario inferences. Right. So that's one side. Now, the last thing I want to say is if you really, really talk about a proper modeling, yeah, which incorporates all the inputs that are required for a proper climate model, it can go very complex very soon. So the question is for actuaries, whether that's a required level of complexity or in order to do a risk management for climate risk, we can do with the much simpler what if kind of analysis, scenario analysis, or the kind of reporting that Rolf was talking about. So I think that's a question to be asked for the risk managers and for the boards to take a call on that. But I think from a modeling perspective, pure modeling perspective, we can definitely present the different ways to talk about risk and whether to classify as a different risk or not, and whether how they are related with the traditional risks.
So Peter, I want to bring you in there because there's some very interesting questions in terms of the risks are all correlated, but when we do risk management, we do put things into buckets, whether it's operational, yes, credit, liquidity, market. How do you think actuaries and other risk professionals can practically navigate this challenge?
Yeah, so probably the most common situation that we find ourselves in is that there is a model, it has a risk taxonomy built into it that reflects all the risk factors that the organization thinks it's exposed to. But what's not captured there are the common causes and the cause-effect chains that specifically proceed from climate-related processes. And Mike mentioned scenario analysis, and I think that's the crucial overlay to say, if you suppose climate future X or climate future Y, what is that going to do to each of the families of risk that you're concerned about, and how will those in turn start knocking on, and are there feedback loops from those families of risk back into the climate key variables, if you like. And without that sort of crafted analysis of how many things can all go off the expected track at once, a model, even a very complicated correlation-based model, is not likely to give enough weight to those combined outcome scenarios. I think the other question is the old saying about what gets measured gets managed. Has the risk model got the right key indicators in it as outputs? So if you measure everything in profits at risk, then that's great, you manage your profits at risk. But if the organization has said, we are strategically committed to getting reduction in carbon intensity of our balance sheet, then you need to model the carbon intensity of your balance sheet as one of the outputs of the model. Otherwise, you're not measuring what you want to manage.
That makes a lot of sense. And I guess this comes back to one of the points we started with Wendy, which is some of these things are existential. We don't have perfect ways of measuring these, but we need to get stuck in. And I think, Rilof, that's a natural segue into where do you start with all of this, and how do you start to make sense out of something like this, and where do our readers and our listeners go next?
So I guess taking that in two parts, where do we start? And this is what a lot of this discussion has been about, is we have very well-funded, expensive models that we've been building over a number of years. And a natural place is to start applying those models to climate change and measuring what climate change does. And then iteratively, as you see what the issues are that are coming out of that, improve the models, et cetera. And that's why, you know, like Wendy was talking about model risk and why we look at it, these models were not designed for climate change, but they can also be used to do climate change impacts, and then taking the messages out of that, and then build and build and build as we learn and get better at this and get better at this. And then it's a real challenge as to staying on top of what gets published and where it gets published. I mean, there's a few places that I go to generally that I can really recommend. There's going to be us at the IFOA conference in November. So please come and listen to us. That would be one of them. But also more seriously, the IFOA has a weekly sustainability newsletter that I really like. Comes out every Friday. Always got a lot of interesting stuff, topical stuff. Also keeps people up to date of what the IFOA is publishing in the climate and sustainability space. And then two topics that's very important for me at the moment is what the IFRS is doing about climate change reporting, not just for financial firms, but globally. So there's standards coming out. I'm also very interested in what the PCAF is doing. That's an institute that says how we should account for these footprints, the carbon associated with investments. And they've done corporate bonds and they've done equities. And the next one that they're tackling is sovereign bonds. So there's consultations going out there. So those are two key topics for me personally that I'm keeping a close eye on. And then just as a more general one that I can really recommend is the Global Association of Risk Professionals podcast. That's GARP's Climate Risk Podcast. Again, quite regular and one of the best ones that you can really get to listen to.
And just an extra point to build on that, PCAF have also recently come out with a consultation on how to measure the emissions associated with some general insurance products, which just shows how rapidly evolving this area is and how relevant to the insurance industry?
And I think there's probably two angles to this, which we've been talking about. You know, we're actuaries, which means we often gravitate towards quantifying risks so that we can look at the impact, whether it is on your profits, your value, or as you mentioned, Peter. But the narrative side of this is probably as important, because we're not going to be able to measure everything, or we have to talk about things until we can find a way to measure them. And I'm just going to quickly plug something Roelof does with one of his other hats on, which is the Actuaries Carbon Collaboration. If you haven't seen, they put out a very good paper last month on what does net zero mean, and actually looking at emissions and measuring emissions through the value chain. If any of our listeners or readers don't know what scope one, scope two, scope three means, and they haven't thought about financed emissions, it's a great place to start. I know it's one of the places I started. I put my hand up at a conference only a year ago and said, what is scope one, scope two, scope three? And we need to ask these questions, and we need to not be embarrassed to ask these questions. And I think what you guys have done a great job as a working party of doing is you've put together a really useful report which has those knotty questions. So the things which you were sort of too shy to ask, and you're saying, well, why does climate change matter? And Wendy started earlier talking about physical risk, talking about transition risk. These are the sort of basic language that you need to learn before you can even start reading some of the other things. So Roelof pointed us towards various different resources, but embarrassingly, I've got to say, you can't read some of these resources until you have the language. So you need to learn the language of climate change, and then you can go and get involved in some of these initiatives to do something about it. Absolutely brilliant to spend some time with you guys today. We could talk for hours, but I'm sure our listeners have other things to do, and they want to go and download your paper and read it because they're now so inspired. So thank you, everybody, for your time. If you'd like to hear more from this group, again, head off to Liverpool or log on to the Liverpool IFOA conference. They will be speaking on the 24th of November. This is such an important topic, and you guys have done a great service to us. So thanks again. Watch the space for more IFOA podcasts, and well done to the team for contributing towards this really, really important initiative. Bye for now.